Thank you and good morning. Just last week on the 25th of May, a fire occurred outside Witt in a hog confinement owned by Phil Bork. The fire started about 4 a.m. that morning until fire staff arrived to put out the flames. I caught up with Phil about the fire, how the sows that survived are doing, and the plans to rebuild. I'm here with Phil Bork of Bork Farms. Phil has recently suffered a barn fire in his hog confinement near Witt. Phil, from all of us here at WSMI, we are truly saddened to hear about the fire at your facility. Has there been any indication of how the fire started?
No, we still, we had engineers there yesterday and electrical engineer will be coming in next week.
Do you have a final number of hogs lost?
No, and it's only been a week. You know, here it is 7 days later and Forging Farms is back to raising pigs. We had pigs being born the very next day, and we're having buildings repaired, and we're moving forward and looking forward to the future. The thing we'd like to do is make sure that we thank the overwhelming support that we had from the community, the first responders, from our neighbors, from our friends and family. That came to our needs on Friday morning, and it's just been overwhelming, the amount of support that we've had.
That's truly a sentiment to the ag industry, I feel, that, you know, whenever one of us falls down, there's always the rest of us there to catch them. So that's great that you guys had so much help on Friday. Was it a lot of cleanup on Friday then?
Very little cleanup got done on Friday. The focus Friday was to move the girls that did not have ventilation and water to another one of our farms that worked with us. The Weedy Camp family in Raymond Farmersville jumped in and made room for the for sows that need to move that day. And then it's amazing actually how many sows we were able to save underneath the rubble. And we were actually moving live sows out on Saturday that we had no idea that had survived the fire at that point.
How many sows did survive?
The vast majority of the sows on the farm survived. One of the barns that burned was actually empty, and so the main loss was all of our farrowing at that point burnt, but we was able then to move some girls into a new farming facility that was right beside it that survived this fire because of a concrete bunker in between the two, and that stopped the fire from continuing into it.
Well, that's really, you know, that's pretty amazing that those sows even survived. I worked for the mash offs, and I can't imagine those pigs, you know, underneath all that rubble in the fairly ventilated buildings anyway, but that's pretty amazing. Are any of the remaining hogs suffering any health repercussions due to the fire?
As the standing operating procedures that we did not have in place, but others jumped in response to, is we actually had two veterinarians on site before noon on Friday. Another veterinarian came later in the day, and then our personal vet then came on Saturday then, and their primary focus was in the health and welfare of the pigs throughout the whole farm, and they was getting into the rubble with the firemen and caring for the sows that were there and making the judgment call of can, you know, does that sow need to be euthanized or not. And so the veterinarians were great in helping us get that task done while we were trying to save and take care of the majority of the animals. They were taking care of the individuals.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's a good thing those vets were on call and able to help, and I'm sure they dropped everything to get out there. You said that you guys had plans to rebuild and are looking towards the future. Have you started rebuilding yet? I know it's only been a week, so you've probably been dealing, like you said, with the individual animals more, but are there set plans to rebuild anytime soon?
We've already setting trusses today on one of the barns that was partially damaged. So we've been working all week at preparing to bring in new materials We look to have one of the barns up and running within 3 weeks of the fire, so we can move those girls back home. But it will be a long process to repair the farm, and we're really looking at probably a year's process before we have some semblance of being normal.
Well, again, Phil, we're sorry to hear about the loss you suffered, but we know you'll be back on your feet in no time. It sounds like you guys are already pretty much back on your feet, getting things started again. Thank you for sharing with us here at WSMI, and I look forward to talking to you again in the future.
I just, again, want to thank everyone that came to our needs, and it's overwhelming, and it's great to be part of a small community, and we had ag and non-ag people reaching out and helping, and it's just an awesome response, and myself and my family thank everyone.
Thank you to all those that joined in the efforts to help and truly show what it means to live in a small rural community. We wish the best of luck to the Borks as they rebuild. Missouri has welcomed a new governor, and the Missouri Farm Bureau welcomes Governor Parson with open arms. Mike Parson learned Tuesday that he would become Missouri's next governor when he was about to bale hay on his cattle farm. Parson's arrival in the state's top office Friday afternoon upon the resignation of Eric Greitens taking effect is welcomed by farm groups across the state, including Missouri Farm Bureau.
It's nice to have a governor that knows agriculture, knows cattle, knows rural Missouri. When he ran for lieutenant governor, had tremendous support in all of rural Missouri. Good friend of all of us that do the work that we do here in Jeff City. So he'll be a great governor. Of course, he's got a great team over at the Department of Ag.
Hertz says Parson is perhaps the best prepared governor to handle the multiple issues Missouri farmers are dealing with.
The issues that are important to our members, I can't think of anything that any governor that's ever been as well prepared as Governor Parson. And, you know, one of the issues we'll be working on this fall is transportation funding. And the new governor has always been a supporter, again, of good roads and bridges in Missouri. So I'm sure he's examining those issues. And I don't want to anticipate how he'll move forward as governor. But I know in the past we've had great support from the senator when he was a senator.
Greitens entered Jefferson City as an outsider with his position on several key agriculture issues unknown to the point where Farm Bureau's Political Action Committee endorsed his opponent, Chris Koester, in 2016. Despite not having that endorsement, Hertz said Greitens proved to be an advocate of agriculture during his 17 months as governor.
Obviously, it took some time after his election because of the endorsement, but we developed a relationship with he and his staff. We made some progress, and there were issues that were important to our members, and we had grown to trust him on agriculture issues, and he did a good job for farmers.
Just prior to taking office, Greitens appointed former Farm Bureau Director Chris Chen of Northeast Missouri's Shelby County as Director of Agriculture. Hearst says that this was the first of several accomplishments for Missouri's agriculture.
Governor Greitens obviously, you know, appointed Chris as Director of Agriculture. That was important. He fully funded the biodiesel fund just here recently. He's been a champion of rural broadband, something we're interested in. So we accomplished some things as he served his short time in office, but we are looking forward to working with Mike Parson.
Missouri Farm Bureau President Blake Hurst says he looks forward to working with incoming Governor Mike Parson about other ag-related issues, including rural broadband access and minimizing the damage caused by dicamba drift. In national agriculture news this morning, officials from Mexico and Canada have discussed the importance of NAFTA. Mexico's chief NAFTA negotiator and Canada's top agricultural official say their countries remain committed to completing the North American Free Trade Agreement renegotiation effort, however long the effort may take. Kenneth Smith, Mexico's NAFTA chief negotiator, along with Lawrence McCauley, Canada's Minister of Agriculture and Agri-Food, addressed the 22nd World Meat Congress in Dallas, Texas, Thursday, hosted by the U.S. Meat Export Federation and the International Meat Secretariat. Smith of Mexico says the negotiations that started in August are about 75% complete, with proposals for the tougher issues currently on the negotiating table.
pretty much, I would say, to a degree of 70-75% of progress in all of that modernization agenda. We still have the tougher issues that are being discussed at the ministerial level on issues that the U.S. has put on the table on automotive rules of origin, dispute settlement, and sunset clause. These are, by the nature of the difficult type of negotiation on these issues, they will go until the end. We continue negotiating. We have made specific proposals on automotive dispute settlement and sunset over the month of May. We're waiting to hear back from the U.S. at the same time that we continue working at the technical level to schedule the next ministerial meeting, but we continue negotiating.
Mexico will first elect a new president in July, a date negotiators were hoping to avoid. Smith explains how Mexico's elections could impact the negotiations.
Well, I mean, there's several scenarios. One is that we conclude before the transition of power, we conclude the negotiation, in which case the new administration will have to decide whether that package is satisfactory for them and to take it to the Mexican Senate for approval. Or if we haven't finished the negotiations, it will be up to the new administration to continue, sort of pick up where we left off on November 30th and then begin to making those decisions as to where to take Mexico's trade policy. But as I said, the main presidential candidates have all talked about the importance of NAFTA and the benefits that it has brought to our country.
Mexico and Canada both consider the recent steel and aluminum tariffs a separate trade issue that will be addressed outside of NAFTA. For Canada's McCauley, he says NAFTA has been very beneficial for the agricultural sectors of all three countries.
We are reevaluating NAFTA. I think this is 11 or 12 times we've done that. It's not a new thing to do. So what we want to see happen is, I think, what most American farmers, and I've had the opportunity to be in this country quite a number of times, and I've never met anybody practically that's not saying that NAFTA is vitally important to the agricultural sector. So representing agriculture in my country, it would be pretty wise for me to make sure that I promote NAFTA and make sure that we come up with a deal that's even better.
Meanwhile, Smith says trade negotiations take time and will finish when all three sides reach favorable agreements.
We will continue negotiating as long as it takes. We will not rush into a closure if the substance is not there. It is the substance that must guide the negotiation. So regardless of the political process in Mexico or the elections in November, we will continue negotiating and we will close only when Mexican priorities have been addressed and we can come back to our country and say we have an upgraded NAFTA that is better than the one we had before.
Again, the two made their comments during the 2018 World Meat Congress, a gathering of more than 700 international meat industry representatives. Learn more online at www.usmef.org. The agriculture industry is preparing for a tariff pushback. President Donald Trump is moving ahead with steel and aluminum tariffs on some of the United States' closest allies, and that could result in serious pain for agriculture. Politico says any official documents released by the administration are expected to include some wiggle room for allies. European Union officials are said to be resigned to accepting that some sort of tariffs are coming their way. The EU has vowed to hit back with retaliatory tariffs. A recent list compiled by the EU targeted $3.3 billion worth of U.S. imports. Politico says the list shows products targeted for retaliation were drafted so as not to harm European Union industries. Some of the products are closely designed to impact Republican-leaning states, such as Kentucky bourbon. Others on the list include rice, peanut butter, orange juice, and cranberries. Canada and Mexico aren't immune from the tariffs either, and both countries have said they will retaliate. It's frankly absurd that we would in any way be considered to be a national security threat to the United States, says Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland. That's all the time we have on this Morning Farm Show. Tune in this afternoon for a look at the horse industry. Reporting for WSMI, this has been Jamie Geisler.